Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, as always, here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. On today's show, a great morning to be a Walmart shareholder. They blew it away on their earnings report, so we're going to talk about that. Going to talk about the pod stocks not getting much love over the weekend in bad ratings. And what is getting some love for the first time and what seems like forever is Bitcoin. I'm not sure if we have any real fundamental drivers for that move, but getting some love nonetheless over the weekend. Hope you everyone had a nice long weekend and you enjoyed the day off, but we've got a good show for you today. Ivan Feinseth will be our guest. He is the CIO at Tigress Financial Partners. He would join us at 8:35. Joel, why don't you give us some quick levels on the overnight session in the S&P futures here? And unmute yourself though. It's okay. Long weekend.
Why didn't I make that bet?
We're shaking off the rust.
Didn't I make that mute bet? See, you knew he'd do it.
I didn't know he'd do it.
It was the wrong week. I made the bet in the wrong week. Anyways, Joel, you're up. Are you off mute now? I hear him. He's off mute. Look, there he is.
Yeah, it's Tuesday. Come on, I'm a little bit off. We went out of show on Monday. It wouldn't happen.
He's always got the excuse too.
Spencer, we had a good day on Saturday, right?
It was okay. I mean, the outcome wasn't what I was hoping for, but it was a good time.
Yeah, we had a little bit of fun at the Michigan Maryland game, so I just thought I'd get that in there. It was fun, but we're red here, folks. Holy moly, what a day on Friday! Strong close, options expiration. They opened higher, jammed it all day. We are down 7.25 points at 2769.75. Pre-market low, 66.75. Not seeing much down there, folks. Maybe we'll see what happens in the lower 60 handle. You have the intraday low from Friday as well as your daily pivot point. Coming back on the upside, not much resistance off that whoosh we had. Mid-range on the session comes in at 27.73.5. So some loose numbers up there on both the upside and downside. Crude, we talked about the 52 to 55 trading range. Well, it took out the top of that range on Friday. Is continuing higher, up 87 cents here at 56.46. So maybe we'll finally have a meaningful retracement in the crude oil market. And look now, gold up $12 here at 13.34 even. That's kind of a nice move. And I know you guys don't want to talk about it. You don't want to hear about it. But Bitcoin knocking on the door. They're up $347 to $39.05. And Dennis, you had an interesting point about Bitcoin and some of the moves it's had over the last few years.
I mean, we've seen this happen on long weekends before where Bitcoin has a big up move, and maybe it's selective perception on my part, but I can remember tweeting about this in the past. I'm just going to say everything, you know, there's manipulation in everything in these markets. We know in the regular markets there's manipulation. The crypto market is more unregulated. So there's going to be a lot more manipulation in the crypto markets, in my opinion, because it's not as regulated. If you're going to want to move price, you're going to do it when liquidity is at its lowest point. And, you know, when you have a long weekend, probably not a lot of people trading, you know, doing other things. It's like you see these big moves in the S&Ps. When do you see them? You typically see them at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. If you're going to move the markets and you want to move the markets, you're going to move it when liquidity is at its lowest. So if you were doing manipulative activity in Bitcoin, the best time to do it is on these long weekends when everybody's away. And maybe it's selective perception on my part, but it seems like every other long weekend. And I know it wasn't the case with the Martin Luther King one, but I know it was the case a couple times last year. I can remember a big move even over Thanksgiving to the upside. If you really want to pump the price and try to get it up, you're probably going to do it over these long weekends when liquidity is lower. So not saying it's all manipulative here over the weekend, but I'm saying there's the possibility it is.
Yeah.
So that's my theory here on, you know, and I'd love to see a paper and a study on this because, like I said before, I've seen this happen not often, but multiple times before, where you get a long weekend and you get a big move in Bitcoin. And when the cat's away, the mice will play.
Yeah, and, you know, definitely it's happened. You see it happen in the futures as well. Futures are trading, you know, a 20-some point range a lot of times with the stocks not open. So
it's and a lot of that can be, too, is there's not the hedging stuff. So some of it, you know, is a little bit, you know, after 8 o'clock, the stocks close, the futures kind of get released because there's nothing else to hedge with. I mean, you can go over to Nikkei, you can do, you know, a few other things, but there's no straight-up hedges. So liquidity goes down. So you will see when liquidity goes down, just moves get exaggerated, even if there isn't manipulated activity. But in Bitcoin, I believe there is. I mean, I read that paper where a lot of the action was shown that from 100 to 1,000 in Bitcoin, that much of that move was done by manipulative activity. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But I believe that there is manipulative activity in everything. I believe it's more in the crypto market. And if you're going to want to move the price, you're going to move it when liquidity is at its lowest, and that could be over a long weekend.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see if the rally can continue here. Like I said, it's been in a trading range, so see if we can get out of the top of that trading range. I mean, it take a long time to get back up to 20,000. A lot of people are sitting under, you know, underwater on it. But and if you want to trade the GBTC, that thing, let's see if that should be moving as well today. That's kind of quiet here. We'll see what now it's down at $10. So if you want to trade the equivalent of that, it's at 484. I don't know, it must be bid up here or something. But this is not responding yet. GBTC. Can you see a market in there, Dennis?
I don't even look at it. What is it? I don't even know the symbol. What's the symbol?
G, George, Boy, Tom, Charlie.
I have the grayscale Bitcoin.
Yep, that's it.
That's what that is?
Yep.
It's up 0.72, so I don't know. I don't trade crypto. I don't trade
Bitcoin,
so I don't know anything about it.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we got some earnings here on this Monday morning. I guess we'll start with Walmart here, going against the grain of those retail numbers we got last week.
Yeah, we thought, especially e-commerce, is what we thought would be weak after last week's number, which was for December. Remember, because of the delay in the shutdown. But that is not what Walmart is saying this morning. Their Q4 adjusted EPS, $1.41 versus $1.33 estimate, so a good beat there. Sales, $138.8 versus $138.66 billion, so a slight sales beat, more of a EPS beat than a sales beat. Their Q4 comp sales are up 4%. Their e-commerce sales were up 43% on a year-over-year basis. They did reiterate their previously issued guidance for the year, and they're raising their quarterly dividend by 1 cent from 52 to 53 cents.
Well, as much as I was having some good luck and stuff was moving for me here, maybe this is going to be a little bit of the turning point, the luck. I said it on Thursday, I believe, on the show. Never say you're having good luck because the market will turn around and punish you for that. I took Walmart short in the report. Small position, but decided that, you know, we're up against a big 100 psychological level. You know, the retail, like the numbers that you were saying, Spencer, you're making that point that, you know, those were not good coming out. I believe that data was Thursday. Was that data Thursday?
Yes.
Yeah, and that data wasn't great. And I was like, you know what, I'll try it short. And I took like a quarter of the normal size position. So like I said, it wasn't a big position. But you know, you nibble in there and obviously getting my face ripped off in that. So I'm glad it was a small position. I have brought some of it in already here this morning. So I'm going to end up covering it here probably very soon because they blew it away. I mean, they blew it away. I don't think the stock's going back to $100 and you got to eat your losses. So this is one loss I'm going to be eating this morning.
You have a pre-market high here at 104.96. You're only a buck away from that. So you can't really say it's leaking yet, but let's use 105 as resistance. Actually, it hit that at 7.30, and the 7.45 highs were 104.84 and 104.50. So
the big psychological hole numbers, like 105, you know there's going to be some size up there. So that's where they've decided, you know, there's going to be some size at a few levels still. But I would guess 105 is probably going to be littered with size too. It's hard to even go, oh no, I can go to the book there. 45,000 in the book. I mean, as things trade 200,000, 300,000 shares, so really the book doesn't even matter. but when you're trading that kind of volume.
Well, just one other point I want to make is that they're going to have to fulfill the offers at 101, 102, 102 and a half, 103. Yeah, so what the designated market maker will have to do, and depending on how many buyers he gets there, you always decide how much of that, you know, I bet you there could be that opening print. Walmart might be, what, a half a million, three-quarters of a million shares? It's always the possibility. I mean, and you know, if you throw a low ball bid in there, maybe some of the, you know, it's trading 103 and a half, 103.70, boom, the DMM opens it, boom, right on the bell, and opens it at 102, everyone's shaking their head, and then boom, it's up at 103, 103 and a half, you know, real quickly. Does not happen that often, but
it happens more often than you think. That is, I use that strategy every single day. Sometimes get stocks, sometimes don't. But when stocks, you know, look like they're going to open too low for whatever reason, and even an earnings stock has been up, and then all of a sudden it opens flat just because there's a lot in the book to go through or something like that, it might hold down that opening print. That strategy has been a moneymaker for me for 19 years. It doesn't work every single time, but it does, you know, have an edge there. And I would think I make money more than 52% of the time with that strategy.
Okay. All right. Just something to keep an eye on. Yep. All right. Little strategy session here. 103.70, up 371, now 360,000 shares have traded. So good battle. Bulls winning so far here in Walmart.
Remember, if you trade an XLP, it's full of Walmart. I think XLP is 8 or 9% Walmart. Also, RTH is a big one. I think it's almost 10%. So remember, when you're trading these stocks, they are in the ETFs. You know, make sure when they're that heavy, and obviously they're going to be influential to the ETF as well. I mean, it's not like it's a huge move. It's up 3.6%, but, you know, you're talking 0.4%. It's just Walmart. So it's, you know, it's got the capabilities, obviously, to open up on a down day. So because Walmart's in there.
And it's one of the first of the retailers to report. So do we get in? Are we getting any sympathy moves here?
Yes, we are. Target's trading up a buck here. Obviously, always think Target when you think Walmart. Target did go ex-dividend here today as well. 72.84 was the close. The adjusted close is 72.20 for the 64-cent dividend. Mm. And we were trading up at 73.20, so we were up a buck here in the pre-market.
Nice. Okay. And Kohl's, which I went to this weekend, and very nice there. Kohl's trading up 42 cents. This looks kind of sick.
I don't think you're going to see this Kohl's move with it, though. That's not really.
No?
It's traded 400 shares. It's offered there. I don't think about Costco, okay. Target, those are the ones, and Target's the pure play. Everything else, you're reaching a little bit. So with Walmart, in my opinion, you know, Costco does have a relationship there. I do respect that relationship. I would be surprised if Costco opened down here today with the good Walmart numbers. But the real play, the real pairs trade that everybody plays with it is Target.
Quick question from Spice, and a little off subject, but I like to do the questions when I see them. Triple D, why do you think the market doesn't respond as much to buybacks?
We went on this a little bit last week. I don't know why it is, but the response to buybacks is really muted. Sometimes they just get authorized and they're not actually done right away. I mean, when Berkshire did their authorization, it responded a lot to it. So you can see cases where buybacks work well, but in a lot of cases here, they're just not moving. I mean, you have Oracle Friday night comes out and authorizes another $12 billion. Stock's trading down. They just don't seem to care. Full disclosure, I still have Oracle position, long-term portfolio, and on for a trade. But, I mean, it's just funny. There's just not that much care for buybacks. I mean, if you talk, you know, dividend raises, special dividends, they seem to give it some love. On the buybacks, they're just not responding. I mean, it still puts a little upward pressure. It's not like it's a complete lack of response. But they're just not responding to buybacks very well, in my opinion, unless it's coupled with something else. Like sometimes they have a good earnings report and then you get a buyback and that gives it more of a boost. But this is random buybacks. We saw Bank America authorize some more shares. I think it was 2 weeks ago. Stock didn't even move on it. So, I mean, it depends on how big the stock is too. But, you know, Oracle, you know, that news maybe was flying under the radar. Do you even have that headline, Spencer? I believe it was from Friday night. There was another $12 billion buyback.
In Oracle?
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that at all.
Like maybe they do it on the wrong night, but I saw it fly by on my news window. I believe on Friday night they authorized, I think it was another, going from my memory here, but I think there was another $12 billion authorized there. So check your news. I don't think it was wrong. So obviously when they authorize it, sometimes they're not implementing it right away. But when it's authorized, usually that's intentions to implement it, like to get it going. So, and I believe it was from Friday night.
Yeah, now, if you're doing buybacks, right.
Here's
right.
a tip. I'm right, ain't I?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So here's a tip for all you companies out there that are listening. Don't do authorize or announce new buybacks on a Friday night of a holiday weekend. That's good news. You want to announce on Monday morning because here you are and people aren't even realizing it's out there. But yes, Oracle did announce a $12 billion buyback late Friday night after the close. And the stock didn't respond at all. It didn't respond Friday night and it hasn't responded this morning. So I guess timing is everything here. You announce those on a Friday night of a holiday weekend and nobody notices.
I'll say one thing too, was you used to get really big reactions in the stocks. You know, they acted like they were buying the stock. But maybe the algos are just like, you know, okay, well, this worked. It's not working anymore. And so they're like,
okay. Well, I do that too. I mean, I'm hesitant to go buy. I see a buyback on a stock and I used to pay up for it right away. I'd pay up like sometimes up to 1% because I'm like, it'll move at 2 or 3. But it's not moving it. So you know what? I'm not even doing it. I played the Oracle a little bit there because it was actually down. I was actually already in it after hours on Friday. But, I mean, you're coming here and buying these things for the buybacks. You're getting disappointed lately.
Yeah. Okay.
And it does, Hunter. It does depend on shares outstanding for sure. I mean, it's all relative, right? I mean, if you do, you can look at it on a percentage basis is the best way to look at it. You know, $12 billion buyback isn't that much for Oracle. You're talking about a company that's worth, what's the market cap? Let's go grab it on Oracle. But it is still significant. I mean, $12 billion on any company is going to be significant. Talking about $185 billion. But $12 billion, talking about 7% of the float, it's fairly significant. So on a buyback, I would say that's significant. Market doesn't care this morning.
Yeah, and Buffett dumped his Oracle, and but you're staying in it.
And that got shrugged off. That was interesting because Buffett, yeah, I'm staying with it. But Buffett dumped the Oracle, and the stock traded down to 50 and a quarter after hours. That opened on Friday. That almost opened up, and it actually ran and got and it closed green. Oracle ended up closing green on Friday after the Buffett news. So the market shrugged that off too. Buy the dippers were out there in the Oracle. It never even got into the 50 handle on Friday. It actively traded in the 50 handle during the after-hours session, during the pre-market. Never even got close to it during the regular session. Basically, it was trading around 51.30, 51.40, 51.50 the whole day and ended up closing up near the highs. So they shrugged that off too.
All right, S&P still in the red here. 27.69, we are down 8 handles. What about, let's start the mover here. Everyone wants to know about ICPT trading up $24.66. Spencer, what do they do?
The insane clown posse stock, as I like to refer to them. But no, they had some great drug news this morning. The pivotal phase 3 trial for a drug for patients with NASH-related liver fibrosis, it met its primary endpoint again. This is a phase 3 Regenerate study, so a later trial, and they met the primary endpoint. Stock got always a bullish headline, and stock got a big pop on that.
Boy, oh boy. Dennis, you want to talk about this one at all? We got to pop up to 160. We have faded off that.
You got to 160 on this?
Yes.
Yep. It's at 135. This is news algos or something. That's insane. I mean, when the stocks want to go up 50 points on this, that's why I don't chase stocks, too. You got to be careful chasing stuff. Like, that's crazy. 160 is crazy. 135 seems a little bit crazy to me. But anyways, I don't follow close enough. Like, obviously,
okay.
This is going to, you know, be, we know stocks move on drug news, but, you know, up to 160, you know, on light volume, you got to be careful on that stuff. I mean, yes, this was a $400 stock back in 2014, but it's been in the doghouse for a while here too. So you do have a lot of people who have been underwater in this for a long time. I mean, yeah, we're up in the last year and a half, but if you go up to the monthlies, you know, we've been pretty much straight down. So there's lots of pain overhead, lots of overhead supply, 165, 170. See all those tops there. You're 135, you're leaking here. That's not great news, but it is great news if you're long still because you're up 21% here this morning. Just, you know, I would say almost impossible to call this where this is going today or where this is going when it's had a, you know, got up to 160 pre-market. Could have given some of it back. Continue to do that. This is stuff I just completely stay away
from. It's random. It's totally random.
It's random walk theory right here on ICPT. Yeah, you can trade anything technically intraday, but right now to say this is going to be back at 125 or up at 145, I think it's coin flip.
We're at 135. I'll just, if you're in this, I just want to alert our traders that you had a high in July of 2017 in the 135 handle, 135.59. And then in October of 18, it got up to the 134 area. So for me, 134, 136, that's a sell zone for me. If it can take out, boom, go 136, 137, 138, it will continue. But, you know, it's a thin stock, a lot of room on the downside here. And if Spencer can show the monthly chart going back to January when it went to 497, it started the month and it's at 68.28, went to 497. I don't know if this is this the same drug or the same trial? Bank America upgraded. It had one of the craziest 3 or 4 day moves I think I've ever seen in a stock. And so I don't know. So when these high flyers like this or former high flyers, I'm more tending to fade the price action. But if you got a long in it today, congratulations.
Let's jump over. There was a few other stocks that reported here this morning, and sure, we might as well jump into. And obviously, we're entering retail earnings season, but so there's going to be a lot more. 232 stocks reporting here today. So we're getting into some small caps. We're getting into some other stocks. So if there is a specific stock you want to talk, let us know. We'll try to do the technicals on it and get it in. But let's go over to RIG, R-I-G. It's trading down here. It's one that a lot of people do like to trade. Obviously moves with oil to a certain extent, but it's getting hit here this morning, assuming the numbers weren't great.
I haven't seen the report. Are they out?
It was on my calendar. Is it due to report?
I don't know the due to report today.
I'm just trying to make sure. Let me
see. I think it's after the close, isn't it?
No, it reported. It did. 8K came out at 609.
I may just not have it here. Oh,
it was yesterday. Okay. It's because it was Monday.
Oh, my God. I hate when they do this.
Because we had the holiday weekend.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that's why. Thanks, Benner. It was Monday because we're Tuesday, so we have the holiday
weekend. Oh, yeah.
Missed by 10 cents. They lost 34 cents.
Throws everything off. Yeah, they missed by 10 cents on the EPS. Gosh,
it was on my. So I wrote the Monday ones down here today, too, because obviously they were reporting. So I wrote it all down, anything that was going to report. But there was a couple companies. I think it was 10 companies that reported yesterday on the holiday. And RIG was one of them. So Transocean trading down here. Stock's shown some life as of late. I'd say, you know what? It's a candidate to buy the dip, this one here, because oil's come back a little bit there. I still don't know about the long story with RIG. I don't know. They're still losing money here. But you got good support at 8. So you get anywhere in the mid-8s, I think, you know, leaning on that support at 8, I don't mind a trade there.
Yeah, it's down. We're trading down 23 cents. The area I'm looking at, probably the same as Dennis here. You have an 864 low from Friday, but if you want to wait for a little bit more, you got three lows at 830. So that's 40 cents away. If you open lower and it just doesn't want to get there, then it, you know, would be a great candidate to buy the dip. 905 was the high on Friday. It went off the board at 893. So getting back over 9 is a big level on the upside here for RIG. Couple green candles, now a red candle. So we'll see if the buy the dippers come in.
Also had Medtronic reporting, MDT. I see that trading up in the pre-market. How'd they do?
I'm sorry. I don't have that one either.
All right. I'm going to go grab MDT.
Hold on a second. Let me check.
They reported. It's up to an hour. Let me check in the PR. Maybe it was yesterday too.
Let me check in the PR. Hold on a second. I'll have to go digging for it because we don't have it yet.
There's all kinds of Medtronic news. So Medtronic reported $1.29 versus $1.24, 7.55 billion versus 7.52 billion. Beat on the top, beat on the bottom. They also got an FDA breakthrough designation on something for developing some something. I'm trying to grab some insulin pump. So multiple good news, it looks like, on MDT here this morning, and MDT is trading up about $2.50.
Yeah, nice rally. You do have a double top here, just on a 15-minute chart, nothing to get excited about. That level comes in at 95, just under 95, 94, 98 was your high. We haven't been up in this quadrant in quite some time. Let me see if I can find. I see three highs at 97 as well. So use the half and whole numbers, 95, and then things like they open up to 97. try to buy this on a dip is probably not really my cup of tea here. So just looking at areas of resistance in this one.
Reporting tonight, and we're going to get a few here, Fang, Herbalife. You know what? It's a lot of small companies. Lazy Boy is going to report. You're kind of into like a lot of the smaller companies now. You've had the big guns reporting, and we do have 232 stocks, but you look at the list, and you're like, it's not a lot of really major companies here. One stock I did want to cover, which we didn't have a chance to talk about here yet this morning, and wow, did it have a bad day on Friday, was Mattel, MAT. Did you see this one, Joel? So this is why... This is why you book those gains on these dogs, because here's Mattel. They had a good quarter, had the gap and go for 5 days. And then they come out 5 days later. And
how?
Did they warn? Like, did they really do this? Like, come up and actually warn 5 days after all that?
They really did that.
Like, that's just off.
What,
you're not going to do that on the original earnings release? So you're going to let the stock go up like that? You know, enjoy, you know, you almost wonder if there's execs, I'm not saying this happened, but if there's any executives that were dumping in that 5 days, some people should go and get in some major trouble for that. Because I don't know if that's going to be the case, but if we start looking and we see some execs, any of them dumping on the 8th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, that's dirty as hell.
It was my exact reaction to it. I'm like, this is new information?
You can't tell me that everything changed in 5 days. You can't tell me that it was all completely different. And what did they say about guidance on the earnings release? Did they even say, or they didn't give any? They couldn't have said it was good and then bad, did they?
I don't think they said anything. Let me look in the release
itself.
They just
kind of ignored that part.
Yeah, well, the market must have ignored it because
maybe they didn't say anything about it, you know, too much about the guidance. Here, and then 5 days later, they warn, and the thing gets absolutely crushed. And we're still going down. And I mean, Mattel, you can say, you know, and all the media is saying, oh, Barbie's back. Here, 5 days later, Barbie is not back. So, you know, we know, and you know, the toys are having trouble. You know, you're making physical toys, they're not doing as well. We saw what's happened with Toys R Us. So, you know, you look at Mattel and, you know, do they have some other businesses? Sure. Hasbro probably has a lot more other businesses, though, doing some other things. The stock's just a dog.
Yeah,
it was a dog after the report. And, you know, what we said after the report that day was like, I think my words were, this is a gift. I said, Mattel being up 20, 25% or whatever it was a gift. And it was, it lasted 5 days and the gift is gone.
I just did a control F in the PR for first quarter because that would be the guidance they gave, and there's no mentions of anything related to first quarter performance that they gave.
Yeah, it is saying there's already lawsuits starting. He's got some business wire. There's possible lawsuits happening already over this.
I'm sure there are. Yeah,
Gibbs, I just clicked the link from this is the press release there that posted in the pre-market chat.
I'm seeing two. I'm seeing two just now. I'm seeing Zemanski and I'm seeing I'm seeing two different firms release PRs this yesterday.
Gibbs Law Group investigating claims on behalf of investors of Mattel, invoking possible securities law violations. Our investigation focuses on allegations of Mattel and certain of its officers and directors may have engaged in unlawful business practices or securities fraud. Basically talking about barely a week after the company said strong holiday sales at Barbie drove a surprise first quarter profit, and then they warned. So 2018 was a great year for Barbie, they were saying. And I'm just I'm skimming this, guys.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, you know, the proof is in the price action here. And for this one, if you're long, I don't know what to tell you if you're long. But if you're short or you want to get long off this, why not go down to 1245? That fills the gap from the earnings, which was a bit confusing. So that's where I'm calling support here in Mattel. But just, you know, people just got crushed on that, and we'll see what happens. First thing that popped into my mind was, yeah, like new information here. And this one alert our traders too. Hasbro, that added to report too. That fell on it. That fell on the news this Friday. It's not specifically related to it, but man, oh man, nice wall at 90 here in Hasbro. If we can, manage a 4-point rally, four highs in the 90 count. Actually, call it five highs. So someone trying to wiggle out of some major stock here in 90 bucks. Not sure we're going to see that today in Hasbro.
8:31, Dennis, can you give us a quick update on the opening imbalances, if there are any?
Yeah, there's some big ones. And we had some movement on the close on Friday, so just be careful. Some stocks really ran up, and some stocks, you know, were moving around there because we did have an option expiration. Gee, 438,000 to sell. That's of note here. Coke, 112,000 to buy. Procter Gamble, 48,000 to sell. It's just interesting because they're going the opposite way. Wells Fargo, and those two often do trade with each other. Wells Fargo, 58,000 to buy. Alibaba, 40,000 to sell. You know what? That's about it. I don't see it. Like there's a few out there though this morning. So it's not Lilly, LLY, 41,000 to sell. That's significant.
That was really such a strong close on Friday. I mean, it was just buying.
Yeah, I got caught fading it a bit, and you know what? It would have worked on the market, but I faded the wrong stocks. So I faded a few here, and I'm getting dinged this morning here. So I'm having a tough day.
All right,
it's because my P&L is deep in the red. Walmart, though. Holy, what's Walmart? Look at that. Walmart's coming back. I wish I wouldn't have covered any. Down to 102 now, Walmart.
Is it they're doing their conference call?
What's going on. Walmart's giving a lot of it back, though. That was a great report, and it's giving a lot of it back.
And what were you saying just last week? I don't remember which of you. One of you was saying it last week, and it was when we see them leak hard for like an hour or so or more.
Yeah, then sometimes they need to give it all back.
They'll just give it all back.
Sometimes.
Yeah, just a lot of people stuck short this one. But you've had a basis the 15-minute chart here. You've had a step-down seller here. I started at 105. He let it breathe a little bit. And then he or she has just come back in. I mean, you got to think about it. What was the expected move in Walmart? Or what if you have the 100 calls or the 101 calls or the 102 calls, 102.50 calls? You're just scratching your head right now. But locking in profits, thick stock, and then, I mentioned before about could be a lot of stock in the book. Maybe someone's pulling their 101 order right now and saying, why sell at 101 when I can sell at 102.5, 103? I'm not going to rely on the designated market maker to give me the best price. So a couple different factors here working in Walmart. So I'm glad it's coming in for you a little bit, Triple D. 833, I'm going to go. Can I go play a little Apex Legends before our next guest or Fortnite? Do I have time to do that, or do you want to do one more stock?
I think you have time. You want to go play, Joel? you want to go play a quick game? I don't know if you you don't even have the game. What am I saying? You don't even have the game. All right. Well, let's take our first and only break of the day, and let's grab today's guest. Ivan Feinseth, partner and CIO at Tigress Financial Partners. We'll be right back in a moment here with Ivan. All right, welcome back, everyone. Pre-market prep, Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick, now joined by Ivan Feinseth, partner and CIO at Tigress Financial Partners. Ivan, how's it going this morning?
It's going pretty good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty good.
Yeah, we're doing well here in the Motor City. Anything special on the three-day weekend? Did you do a little traveling, hang out with the family? Anything fun?
Spent time with my daughters. And one of the things I like to do is shop, and the malls continue to be busy as we are in a very strong economy.
Okay. All right. Well, we got a couple topics here to cover, and the number one topic that has been moving the market is trade with China. As of right now, there's an upcoming meeting with President Trump and President Xi. How long is this going to go on, Ivan? You got to tell us. You got to let us know when this is finally going to be over.
I believe and am hopeful that we will see some type of memo of understanding, some type of framework in early March. And then President Trump and President Xi should meet shortly after that. So I think they should meet mid-March. And we should see some kind of agreement before the spring. President Trump has often said he wants to be judged by the stock market, and he saw what happened at the end of last year when concerns kept increasing about an ongoing trade war with China. And I don't know how closely everybody follows the Shanghai stock market, but that it has been in a downtrend since last January. The Chinese stock market, as measured by the Shanghai Composite Index, peaked last January and was down over 30% by the end of the year. So the Chinese stock market has suffered dramatically more than the U.S. stock market. And we've seen all kinds of headlines out of China over the past few months about their economy slowing as well. So I think President Xi is very motivated now to make a deal with Trump.
Okay. All right. So we'll look for that. That'd be great. I mean, that would be a great thing for the market. And just when it's anticipated that things are going well, it gets a nice jump. And when things are going bad, you see what happens to the market. That was a great point. So let's just go. So let's try and take out that equation and look at the market based on the recent rally, the fundamentals, the earnings season, general outlook of the market, getting right back to where we were really when this whole the whole sell-off started back in early December. Give us your outlook on the overall market.
Well, I did say that Q4 results would lift the market, but what we really saw is a trend that not as bad as feared replaced better than expected as catalyst to lift stocks. So many companies did not report the disappointing results that became an increasing concern. And once I think we see some clarity to trade, you will see a lot of companies probably guide higher their 2019 outlook as they remove either the cost of the tariffs or the uncertainty of what has been a over a year-long trade war with China.
Ivan, I want to...
So I am very bullish here, and I think that a trade resolution would be a powerful catalyst. We could see a huge rally, but it will kind of set the stage for a run that could make new highs in the S&P 500 anywhere between April and late summer. And right now, the S&P 500 is 2775. It's less than 25 points away from its 2800 resistance level. If we can close above 2800, I think it's an easy shot to a new all-time high above the 2941.
Ivan, I want to pivot to individual names here, and there is one that we've had you on the show to discuss in the past, and they are reporting earnings after the close today, and that is Herbalife. Do you still follow Herbalife? And if so, what are your thoughts here?
Absolutely. I attended their analyst day a couple months ago. The company has just an incredible positive momentum. There's just a huge interest in pursuing a healthy lifestyle. Nutritional supplements are very important because people say, if you eat a balanced diet, you don't need supplements, which is really not true. There are the additives in the food and preservatives really block our absorption of healthy nutrients. So it is important to take supplements, and these nutrition clubs that the Herbalife agents form really create an inclusive environment, and people want kind of the one-to-one guidance and help of staying on track of a diet and exercise program. So I think they have introduced a number of new products, including this coffee shake, which is doing incredibly well.
So forgetting for a minute about just the whole like nutrition and whether you're, whether you're a believer in the products or not, as far as the business is concerned, we know that Ackman was famously short and is no longer short Herbalife. I guess you could say he lost that battle. But the fact that the stock is sort of held up here, and as I pull up even a longer term chart, and the fact that they sort of survived this heavy activist negative push from Ackman, what do you think that means for the stock going forward?
Well, unfortunately, Ackman's short thesis was very flawed. The basis of his thesis was that if more than 90% of your end users are really distributors, it could be construed as a pyramid scheme. So what was happening when people become distributor or people become customers, they sign up as distributors because they want the first level discount, even though those people may have no interest in becoming salespeople or distributors. And what was happening is a lot of the people were misclassified as distributors. So they changed that people who want to be prefer to want the discount, but don't want to be distributed as preferred customers. If they want to become distributors, they pay another fee to become a distributor, and they can then actually sell the product. So it really created, the end result was it created more clarity and more compliance to the business model that removed some of the misconception that Ackman's thesis was based upon. And by the way, this is a 38-year-old company that has a tremendous history of success. And they have grown revenue every year. They have good products. People enjoy being distributors or agents. And it really has been a successful company and will, I believe, continue to do so.
All right. I want to pivot to a – first of all, thank you for coming. We had you on like maybe it was a year and a half ago to debate with Quoth the Raven. So thanks again for doing that. But I want to pivot to Disney now. They had earnings, I guess, now 2 weeks ago, and they did all right for themselves in the quarter, and their streaming, which we know is the big issue there, the cord cutting. They said they have 2 million paid subscribers to ESPN Plus, primary driver of sentiment there. What was your overall impression of the Disney report?
They're going through a transition, and I think where they will be successful in evolving to be I think they are one of the most powerful media companies. I mean, content is king, and Disney is the king of content. And they own the action adventure franchise genre, or action adventure genre. I've often said that Harry Met Sally is a great movie you'll never see in Harry Met Sally lunchbox. The power of the action adventure genre, the halo effect that drives licensing product sales, the theme park attendance, is the momentum is so strong, and I think it will continue to carry Disney. They've had back-to-back record box office years. I believe this year will be another record box office. They have 10 blockbusters in the pipeline, including Avengers Endgame, Captain Marvel, and the Star Wars 9 movie coming out at the end of the year. They also have a new release of Frozen 2 and a re-release of a couple of other movies that have done very well. I mean, Frozen was an incredible surprise when it came out a few years ago. And they just have this incredible power that drives box office revenue, that then drives licensing revenue and drives park visitation.
We're on the line with Ivan Feinseth. He's a partner and CIO at Tigress Financial Partners. Ivan, we had you on a while ago, and you were pounding the table on Garmin. And here we are. I believe this is a new all-time high in this stock. So I just want to know, has it met your target here? Do you not have target? Oh, no, this is not the all-time high. Got a little excited in 2007.
It is 11. It's an 11-year high.
Yeah. So you have a price target, sticking with it, trimming, selling calls. What are you doing?
I don't use price targets, but I believe the stock goes a lot higher. Not only is aviation a powerful driver, but smart wearables and the interaction of smart wearables and health and fitness is going to be huge. And Garmin is really pioneering this. They have relationships with medical schools too, like, for example, University of Kansas Medical School, to do work on AFib and sleep apnea, which are two major issues that are being able to be monitored by a number of the new Garmin smart wearables. They just bought last week a company that to me is not only a competitor to Peloton, but could really grab a big piece of the home indoor cycling, indoor fitness market, because you can connect it to your Garmin heart monitor and measure your fitness results. You can create, they have software that tracks your fitness results. It all syncs with the Garmin app on your phone. They are creating a tremendous smart wearable health monitoring, fitness monitoring ecosystem, in addition to all the great aviation and marine products that they have.
Do you have a Garmin watch? Do you use any of the products?
I am wearing a Fenix 5X, 5 Plus X right now. And I myself have helped Garmin sell a lot of watches because everybody's always intrigued and they go, wow. And then they go buy a Garmin watch and tell me how much they love it.
And competition from Apple on this, was it just, the big push? Are they ahead of Apple on the health and the watch, or you think that they can peacefully coexist?
Very different. It's not a zero-sum game.
Okay.
The Apple Watch is a single item. It's got a $400 price point. It's got a lot of functionality. Garmin has over 20 different smart wearables that start from $89 and go up to $1,300 that have an incredible level of sophistication and capabilities. I think they will emerge as one of the leaders. Unfortunately, I think Fitbit has not been a viable competitor. I think they're taking share from Fitbit. And I think it's going to be Garmin and Apple that could dominate the smart wearable market.
All right, Ivan, one more here, and then we'll let you run. NVIDIA, looks like we finally found ourselves a floor around the 150-ish area. Are we going to head back to those highs that we saw or no?
I absolutely think there's huge upside in NVIDIA. Unfortunately, there's an opportunity in a stock when, you know, they have a bump in the road, and they did hit a bump in the road with the misalignment of inventory and the decline in demand from that kind of all converged, the decline in the demand of cards used for cryptocurrency mining with the drop in Bitcoin, for example. But the new ray tracing capabilities and incredible graphic capabilities of the new Turing card is incredible. And you'll still see huge demand for gaming for that, for data center use. And really, in two sentences, what NVIDIA does that really drives the company is they take data, digital data, and turn it into visual information at higher and higher speeds. But they also take visual information, which would be data collected from cameras and LiDAR and radar, and turn it to digital information that could be processed for uses in self-driving cars and machine learning and things like that. So I think there's huge potential. You want to buy a good company when they're having a bad time. They had a bad quarter. They're working their way through it. I think there's significant upside in the stock.
We've been on the line with Ivan Feinseth, partner and CIO at Tigress Financial Partners. Ivan, as always, thank you for the time, and we'll talk to you later in the year.
Thank you.
All right. 8:49 now. Joel, anything of note in the S&P?
Spice was just asking, you know, what he thought about earnings tomorrow, and I would just, we didn't get to ask him that, but, I mean, he's bullish the stock long term, so don't know if you're going to get a bang, you know, a great report this time, but I think he's bullish long term. He thinks going a lot higher, so I don't think he's going to be deterred by this report, but be worth watching. I'm going to consider a Garmin here. I have a Swiss Army knife watch. I love to wear in the pool and everything, but maybe I'll check. You do?
I had one.
That's
my
running watch as a Garmin.
I had one and it broke. It didn't last more than 13-14 months, but yeah.
What happened? Were you hard on it?
I don't know. These things just break. I own a Fitbit now. I had a Garmin and I went to Fitbit. I don't know. I'm maybe not the smartest consumer when it comes to these things anyway, but I want to go into ratings.
You are. Yeah, that's you're a smart consumer.
I just buy stuff not doing my research before. I don't know. Whatever. I don't know enough about the wearables to know which is best, even though I've owned two different brands.
I do zero research too. I usually just wear what my wife buys me.
Yeah, I just do a minute's worth of research and go out on Amazon and buy it. I want to do ratings this morning because there are some very interesting ones, and I want to start with FCX Freeport-McMoRan. McMoRan is getting an upgrade here.
Another one.
And we talked about this, right? Exactly, another one. So if you recall, they had an upgrade from Morgan Stanley on the 13th. Their first upgrade in months. First upgrade in months. And I don't even know how long it was from their previous upgrade. But it was maybe since August, I think, was their last upgrade. And that was the 13th. And we have another upgrade here. Citigroup this morning upgrading them to buy. So it's two upgrades to buy in the past week from FCX. And so we talk about how the analysts can be like sheep and just sort of follow the leader. And we're seeing that a little bit here this morning.
I mean, they do. Sometimes you'll see these things and get an upgrade, and then another analyst is like, oh, I was thinking the same thing. And they come and they upgrade it as well before the stock price continues to take off. It was 11.50 really when that Morgan Stanley upgrade. Now you're looking at stock 12.62. All of the movement in the last 2 days or the last three, 4 days is all because of those upgrades. I mean, the big move was up to, you know, 1220 or 1230 the next day after that upgrade. Then it sits here and meanders. Now it's getting the upgrade again, starts to move. Like I'd be interested too in seeing, you know, I'm throwing out research papers here, or thesis if you're doing your PhDs. I'd be interested to see a paper as to how much of, you know, movement in a stock can be extracted just from ratings changes. Because you look at this FCX and we're, you know, 1150, now we're 1262. Pretty much that entire $1.10 move is from those two upgrades. So if those don't exist, stock is probably still back at 1150. Analysts have, you know, as much influence, sometimes even more influence than the earnings reports. There's a big move here in 2 days for FCX off to, or in 4 days off of two, obviously major brokers giving upgrades.
Okay, trading nice in the pre-market, up near the highs of the session. Pre-market high stands at 1270 and just hanging right there. We're the top spin in this thing. December, we peaked at right at this area here. Maybe get up over 13. You got another nice leg up here. Had the gap and going earnings, and now Wall Street is pushing it higher.
Another one here this morning, WW, the company formerly known as Weight Watchers, getting a downgrade this morning from JP Morgan to underweight, cutting the price target from $37 to $25 on WTW.
WTW here trading down back to the low of the move. This stock cannot catch a bid. We've talked about the resilience of the sellers in this stock. Obviously, everything went up in January, and this stock did not. So that was a tell. And I mean, it continued to go down in February. It's had a little relief rally here in the last little bit, but it's right back down here again. Another, you know, rating change, knocking it down 7%. These analysts, man, they move price. So, you know, whether you agree with them or not, you have to respect them because they move the price. And Weight Watchers on a diet here this morning because of JP Morgan.
Yeah, what a run that it had. It just can't
gone.
Catch a bid. Wow.
It can't. I didn't get it. Like, me and you were bearish all the way up. But, you know, at a certain point, like, I don't know. I'd like to be bullish this stock, but I still don't like the whole, you know, yeah, okay, they have a, you know, online model or whatever now. They've kind of tried to evolve themselves a little bit, but it's still Weight Watchers. I'm just not a fan of the company, so it's hard to be a fan of the stock. I've tried to, like, look and say, okay, well, maybe this is going to be the lift. And I've tried it a couple times just to see, you know, just from day trading perspective, saying, okay, maybe we're going to get some life here. Every time it shows a little bit of life, something like this happens, and it's dead again.
I thought you were going to say, I've tried Weight Watchers, and then I would have. There's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe I should have, but the best thing I've been doing, I'm down to 197 pounds. This is the first time I've been under 200 pounds since I got married 14 years ago.
Great.
So, and a little bit to do with the running, a little bit to do, I just am.
And the Weight Watchers, that's what I'm saying.
I'm not using Weight Watchers, I'm just watching what I eat more. I'm not, like, you know, eating till I'm stuffed. And I'm just eating a little bit smarter, you know, not eating out. And we never eat out a lot, but I probably just, it's portion sizing more for me that I always ate a lot of food. And, you know, I'm trying not to eat till I'm stuffed anymore. Just eat till you're comfortable. And I think it's helping, you know, drink water and eating. And I'm down. I was 215 pounds back in the summer. And I was like, well, this is getting too much. Down to 197. So I'm down 18 pounds and I feel pretty good.
Wow.
I feel better.
Nice job.
You know, just that little bit of weight off. Could I get down? I could probably, you know, I'm just over 6 foot. I could probably, you know, get down comfortably to 185. But at a certain point, you know, then you're starting to get a little bit too on the thin side. I feel pretty good. I just want to get under 200. So I'd be happy if I could just hold under 200. So I did it without Weight Watchers.
I'm selling the 190 puts, and I'm taking the
190 puts. I'm not going under 190. Those
and,
are safe.
And And just for a trade, you know, like during the summer.
Wait, guys are different.
And I'm gonna buy the 200 calls.
He's a degenerate. Is what he?
Yeah,
you're gonna buy the 200 calls too. You should buy the 200 calls because the good possibility I'll be back over 200 pounds.
It's been tough
running. In the winter time, I went on the treadmill, like, but, you know, it's like I was going outside and I was kind of enjoying the running, trying to run three times a week. Right now it's difficult because when it's 20 degrees outside, it's just not fun to go outside and run. So you're not motivated. It's like, oh, it's a nice day. No, it's like 10 degrees outside. It's not a nice day. It's freezing outside. And I got a couple of buddies that run still all the time outside. I don't know how they do it because it's just not, it's like when I've ran, I did last week outside when it was 25 degrees. And I'm like, it even burns. Like when you're running, it feels like the cold air you're sucking in through your lungs. Like my lungs even hurt. So it's not that you're physically cold out there. It's just not a lot of fun.
Totally, you know, a 50% retracement would take you up to like 207, 208.
Oh, yeah, I'll probably get back into that 206, 207. I'll be then back over 200 again. It won't stay off. My body wants to be 210. That's where I've sat for years and years. And it seems like I get up to 215, I come back down to the 210. So, you know, my mean, or you know, where I'm going to retrace to, is probably in that 207 to 210. It's probably a pretty safe.
All right. Well, how about this? Now, Dennis, you said you're at 196, right? So we have a record now of that. You're about to go on a week-long vacation starting tomorrow. tomorrow.
I'm buying the weeklies.
Yeah.
I come back, I'm 215 again.
That would be a lot of eating. That would be a lot of Eli drinking. But just got 2 minutes here. S&Ps are just in a real quiet range here, just hanging out, down 8.5 points at 27.68.5. Pre-market low, I got nothing there for you at 66.75. Looking to test Friday's interday low at 27.63. Did we want to cover any other ratings?
Yeah, I'll just run through them real quickly. There's a couple that I wanted to note. McDonald's getting an upgrade this morning from Stevens to overweight. They're raising their price target from $180 to $200. PCG, PG&E getting an upgrade from Citigroup to buy, raising their price target.
What's the argument here?
I haven't seen the note. I'm sorry. I haven't seen the note, but their price target is now $33. It was $11. Upgrading them to buy. I don't know. I'm sorry.
I still want somebody to come on and explain to me how bankrupt company is at $16 a share.
Oh, wait, obviously, here we go. There's going to be some. Hey, listen. This is what the note said. Public comments by the governor and recent conversations with teams in Sacramento suggest that legislation to limit future wildfire risk could be passed in 60 to 90 days. So that's the thesis. That's the crux of the note right there.
I have no idea, because, you know, obviously they declared, like, they're going through their Chapter 11, correct?
Yes.
So, you know, from my history of 20 years of trading, I've never seen a stock that's going through Chapter 11 getting upgrades and trading 16 to 30. But I'm, you know, I'm not saying, even when it was, you know, on the table, I was like, something's weird about this one. That's why I wasn't short the stock, and thank goodness I wasn't, because I'm like, the preferreds were not responding. I'm like, they're not going down. So this is telling you something else going on here. It's obviously going to be some money left for shareholders or something. And Citigroup saying the same thing. So anyways, this is beyond my realm of knowledge when you see stocks that are bankrupt, or at least in Chapter 11, trading for $16.50 a share and getting upgrades. So I'm watching and learning on this one.
And then the other ratings I just wanted to highlight real quick were Papa John's downgrade to sell at Stiefel. And that was pretty
much
it.
What are they saying about that? Do you have the note for that one? Because that thing's been in play.
Yeah, the downgrade. The price target is now $35, but I don't.
They just obviously think it's not going to get bought.
I don't have the note.
Probably think it's not going to get bought.
Probably.
Who's in there? Who's the activist that's in there?
Oh gosh, is it Trian? Is it Peltz? I want to say it's Peltz, but
yeah. Anyways, this is another stock.
Starboard. Sorry about that.
If this is another stock that, if you're buying it, hoping it gets taken over, you may be lucky. But I still like to buy good companies, hoping they get taken over, not bad companies that hope they get taken over. And I think, you know, without a takeover here, I think Stiefel will be right, and this will be $35. So the wild card is, yeah, maybe it does get bought. Maybe somebody comes in and buys it. But the stock's been in, you know, a downtrend here for a long period of time. It's been in the doghouse basically for the last 2 years. So this is a stock I'm just not interested in. It's too much of a gamble.
All right. 901, Dennis, you are going to be out for the next week. You're going to be.
I'm going to be out here coming up on Wednesday, but
tomorrow
I'll be back and I'll be listening in, and I'll be making sure and keeping you guys honest here. So I'll still be kicking around, but I won't be on the show for a week.
Oh man. You'll be in.
You're not on tomorrow.
Nope. Not on tomorrow. I'll be listening though, so make sure you guys don't cuss or, you know, the mute button. And, you know, you guys got to keep it together here while I'm gone. Keep it together, Joel.
All right.
We got Spencer here. So, and you won't know whether or not, you know, Crude is selling off here. But no, listen in, try and say hi. I just wanted one quick programming note today. Last week, I experimented a little bit with the 3 to 5 p.m. Time and got some pretty good responses. So I'm going to do that today over with our buddy Jeremy Newsom. And I put a link in there so you guys come up. What we're going to do is I'm going to work with Jeremy from 3 to 5. And then he does a 5 to 6 swing trading show, which I think is really good for people that, you know, can only pop in and listen to the markets a couple times a day. So looking forward to speaking to you all. We'll cover what we did on today's show, what happened during the day that was new to the market, and also set up some trades for tomorrow. So, Spencer, take it away.
All right, if you missed any part of our show today, catch our podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, or just rewatch our show on YouTube. Thanks to our guest, Ivan Feinseth. Thanks to all of you in both of our chat rooms, both on YouTube and premarket.benzinger.com. Please remember, all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. On tomorrow's show, we will not have a Dennis, but we will have a Dan Zanger on tomorrow's show. He always brings with him some good charts to look at, so we'll look forward to that on Wednesday's show. In the meantime, folks, have a good rest of your day, and we'll see you on Wednesday.